Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey guys, this is the Soul Sisters podcast with your host, Jesse Katz. I am actually recording this intro in my hotel room in Las Vegas this week, where I'm hanging out for the Latin Grammy Awards that are going down on Thursday. So I hope you guys are going to watch those because it's been a huge year for Latin music. And, you know, with songs like Despacito and Mi Gente that have been burning up the Billboard charts, more people are paying attention to Latin music than ever. And it's really awesome to be out here in Vegas this week talking with Latin artists about this moment that their music is having. It's been really inspiring. Speaking of inspiring, the guest on Soul Sisters this week is very much that. Her name is Lights. And she is a badass chick, as they say, and I would definitely apply that term towards her. We had a great talk about how she got into comic book writing. She had this new album out this fall called Skin and Earth, and she released a comic book series that accompanies the album, and it's really cool stuff that she's doing, just this combination of illustrations and music and different ways of storytelling was so fascinating, and she really just decided to do this and attack it and teach herself things and push herself, and it was really inspiring to hear. Also, I had a really interesting talk with her about the challenges of raising her daughter and you know, like encouraging her daughter to basically do what she's doing to push the boundaries of what is expected of women and little girls and, you know, follow her interests. And we have a lot of conversations with artists about representation, usually in the context of representation in media, how important it is to see yourself reflected in, you know, the TV or the movies or the music that you're consuming. You know, sometimes it takes us seeing ourselves reflected back to us to identify things in ourselves, if that makes sense. And anyway, with Lights, we talked about how important that is for children in terms of, for example, the toys that are marketed towards them. You know, that if all we do is tell little girls that they should be nurses, you know, that's what they're going to grow up thinking that they should be. But maybe we could market more like doctors' uniforms towards girls and they could, you know, dream bigger for themselves. Not that nursing is not dreaming big. That is a profession that I extremely admire and could never do. And I also believe it pays very well. So no knocking on nursing. Anyway, I digress. Be whatever you want to be, guys. That's the point. Let's let all the options out there for everybody and everyone just follow their own dream. Okay, on that note, I think we should just get to this episode with Lights on Soul Sisters.
Have you ever been in a musical competition of any sort?
Yeah, I used to do it all the time when I was a kid.
Really?
Just like local stuff, like okay. Songwriting contests and like local fairs where you perform and then you get narrowed down to like finalists and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never won any of them. Oh, I won a songwriting contest once.
Okay.
But I never won any of the other things. It was always like cool dancers or something.
Oh, nah, whatever. That's a gimmick. But songwriting,
right.
That's
there
not
we
a real
go.
Song.
There we
I
go.
Have, like,
yeah.
Guitar
yeah.
And just sing your songs,
yeah.
Like your original songs.
Well, what I did at the competitions was like I'd pick a song, and this is kind of funny. I would pick a song that I'd want to do, and then just record the backing track for it. So like at one point I was like, I'm gonna do I keep on falling, that Alicia Keys song. Yeah. So I like, and I'm like 14, you know, 15. I like pick apart the track, record it at home, make myself like a karaoke track, and then sang to that. So I was like, if it was a production contest, I probably would have won. But nobody knows that nobody knew that I did the backing track. It wasn't being rated for that. It was just my voice.
Right. Was that like ahead of its time almost for that kind of thing?
I think so. I mean, I had the like the, this crappy little 8-track to zip disc, if you remember that medium at all. So yeah, it wasn't easy to just go into your laptop and use GarageBand. You know, didn't exist.
Right, right, right.
So it was not something all the other 14-year-old girls were doing.
Yeah. You were like producing.
I was producing my backing track so that I could submit the singing contest.
Nice.
Yeah. It was a good time. Still lost.
Well, Lights, welcome to Soul Sisters.
Thank you.
Give you guys a proper initiation to the show. This is very exciting. You were supposed to come in a couple months ago, which was like, I think, a few weeks before your album was coming out.
Yeah.
And then some bad weather kept you away from New York.
Yeah, worst few days of my life. Well, no, I was just like, I felt like a trash.
Yeah.
That's what I was for those few days.
Because you spent too much time in airports.
Way too much time. Just like everything. And I didn't have my bag. And I was like wearing the same underwear for 3 days. And like showing. Yeah, I was like.
Tough times.
It was a tough time.
Yeah.
Tough time.
But now times are better.
Times are good. I have clean underwear on today.
Good. Excellent. The album is out. And it's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
So now what are we catching you in the middle of?
Tour. Just past the middle point of our tour with Paris. We're playing in Terminal 5 tonight.
Amazing.
And it's good. Been good. Yeah, it's good. Because the last time we went on tour, really, was on a few shows in between, but it was like 2 years ago.
Okay.
So it's good to be back on the road playing new stuff.
Yeah.
The comic, issue 4, comes out tomorrow.
Okay.
And and it's just really cool seeing it all come together and the whole project.
Yeah.
Ooh, let's talk about that. I feel like we just want to get the whole story because it's such a fascinating thing that you've done.
You've
put together a multimedia music and comic project. So I just want to know.
You're probably super into this because
how are you? I mean,
no, but I'm just thinking it's very in line with what your fiance does.
Combining art. He's a hip-hop artist, and he does, like, stop-motion art and animation
along
with it. Yeah.
So you kind of live and breathe that with him.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I think I'm curious about a lot of things, but the idea of combining storytelling in these two very different forms, but that are completely complementary, and I wonder, first, I just feel like you should just put it in your own words. What is this that we're talking about? And then we can go into, like, the creative process and how that happens.
Well, yeah, it's like, it's an album and a comic. It's something I've always wanted to do, and it's been done here and there in subtle ways. Music and comics have merged slightly, probably most prominently with Coheed and Cambria. There's always been comic counterparts and stuff that he writes.
Usually and a comic that comes after an album.
Those ones have been released with their records, but he just writes it. I think they bring on an artist to work on it.
Got it. Okay.
And then like on Dynamite, which is my publisher. Kiss and Guar of comics, but they don't have anything to do with it writing-wise or art-wise necessarily.
Uh-huh.
So, like, the two mediums have come together in some ways, but... And obviously Gerard Way from MyChem, like, he started doing comics a long time ago and now has, like, a DC imprint and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's done a lot of cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how closely tied the music is with the comics. Mm-hmm. I haven't fully studied that yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always wanted to see that happen in just, like, this perfectly tied way.
Yeah.
A concept album that is told visually with a comic counterpart.
Why is that something you always wanted to see?
I love comics. Okay. I've always read comics. I love them. I've always wanted to see them together because I think there's a lot of comic fans that love music.
Right.
And I think vice versa too.
And when you're songwriting, do you visualize things that way too?
All the time. You visualize things. You want to tell a story when you're writing a song and even down to like color palettes. I see colors sometimes when I'm writing music and when I'm listening to a song.
Is that like some full-on synesthesia stuff?
Totally. Like 100% color palettes that I visualize when I'm listening to these songs on the record have made their way into the comic.
Wow.
Like New Fears is a song called New Fears. Close my eyes, I hear like burgundies and purples. You know what I mean? That was the color palette for that chapter. So it was just something that I always wanted to do. And I thought, this is going to, with my prophetic mind, I was like, this is going to be something that's going to happen a lot more. I got to be the first one to do it.
Yeah.
And I have to do it all myself.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't have money or resources to have anyone else do it. So that was within my boundaries to work on.
I love the honesty. Right. It was also probably the best way to do it, but also financially. I couldn't do anything else. Viable,
yeah, exactly. And I just thought, I have to trick myself into like convincing myself to do it because it is a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. How did you know how to do it?
I honestly just studied like YouTube University, webinars, books, like bought and rented tons of books on it, like sought the advice of people that I know in the industry, kind of online stalk people I'm a fan of in the industry to ask for advice. Just everywhere I went to cons, went to panels, found out everything I could everywhere I went, because as common and massive as the medium is, it actually is really hard to learn how to do it.
That's not surprising.
Yeah, it's like you'll get a book and it'll tell you one aspect of it. Like, this is somebody's take on comic art. But that it's such a subjective topic that, like, every book has a different opinion on how it should be done.
Uh-huh.
So I, after figuring that out, I then went to... Because you'll read a book on art techniques and it's like, not only is that very specific, but some of them are very elitist, where, like, they won't even touch digital art. It's like, oh, you have to do everything with inks and papers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was leaning towards going digital with the art. Because I don't, like, want to waste all those resources to make these comics.
Because mm-hmm.
you can do everything digital now.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up just kind of talking to people then that I was a fan of, like Brian K. Vaughan and Jamie McKelvey, Brian K. Vaughan is an amazing writer. And McKelvey is an artist for a comic that I love. And started to take advice from them because I was like, well, at least I might as well get advice from people that I like their work.
Mm-hmm.
And got some amazing advice from those people. Like, with Brian K. Vaughan, for example... We had sort of interaction going online. He's amazing. He's written, like, Saga, Why the Last Man. He's done writing and producing, I think, for Lost. Like, he's just an awesome writer. He's top of the game.
Uh-huh.
And we were going back and forth. I sent him my acoustic record when it was coming out. And then I was like, I'm just going to pop the question. Can you write this for me? Because I didn't know that I was going to be able to write it. And I'm like, well, I'll do one of them. I'll draw it maybe. And then
to write the story. You're not talking about.
I wrote the story, but I didn't know how to, like, how do you panel? How do you pace a story? I've never written a novel. I've never, what's pacing like in a book
when you sit down?
Structuring, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many words do you put in a page? I just don't know. Totally. And no books tell you that.
But mm-hmm. you want it to animate. But not
I was going to illustrate it, and then I was going to write the base idea of the story, because that's what all the songs were being written about.
Okay.
And I think that's part of the... I mean, not that he was going to do it anyways, but that's part of it. He likes doing original material, and the storyline was sort of structured out. I just didn't know how to take it further.
Uh-huh.
And he was just like, well, no. But I mean, he's like, my wife will kill me if I take another project, but he's like, I think you can do it. I think you are a writer already, and you should do it. I'm like, well, Brian K. Vaughan said I could. So.
Yeah, there you go.
And so he started giving me a little bit of advice on how he panels pages, and that was like, okay, here's something solid that I know I like.
Uh-huh.
I know I like the way his stories read.
Uh-huh.
He's like, I do 5 to 6 panels a page, 12 speech bubbles a page, not more than 2 or 3 lines of text in each speech bubble. Like, I'm like, this is solid, good notes.
Yeah.
This is good. Because nothing tells you this stuff, man.
Right.
Nothing tells you this shit. So, I just went for it. And because he told me I should.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. You're talking about it as if it's something that should be more intuitive. This is something that people devote their lives to. You've devoted your life to music, and somehow in the in-between times, or you've made it a point within a couple years to not only create a new project of music, a complete and a whole and amazing concept album of music, but also learn and create a comic. So it's like...
Yeah. Not even Stan Lee did that.
Right.
Stanley's amazing.
I can't wrap my brain around the discipline. Like, the creative discipline. Aww. And, like,
this
just,
is a theme for you.
Yes. This is, like, very much my, like, fascination. Like, as someone who's been working on, like, one project for a decade and just, like, you know, we're both just, like, we have work and, like, how do you... And then have a life. And
the
you
juggle.
Have a kid. What is your secret to discipline and, like, and sitting down and doing one, like, the comic is one thing, the music's another thing, and combining it all?
I think it, honestly, for me, like, I've been so blown away by the fact that I didn't, like, and I'm still finishing it. In fact, I'm concerned about the last issue because I'm running out of time, but I have to color 30 more pages. It's like this double issue. But asked me 2 years ago if I would have been able to do this, and I would have been in disbelief. I originally thought it was going to be like a 20-page comic, and it's 6 issues, actually almost 7 issues in like 170 pages. And I think I tricked myself into doing it over the course of it as the project started growing into what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the fact of the matter is, like, there's not a minute of it I didn't enjoy. Mm. I loved every second of it. And if you're doing what something you really like, then the hard work is worth it. It doesn't feel like work. Thinking of ideas for the story kept me up at night.
Yeah.
I'd stay up till dawn, literally thinking of ideas and writing down notes.
Uh-huh.
It's just a constant thing that's running through my head. And I just enjoy it so much. And then I think then it's easier to fit it in and make time for it. But it does take commitment. I think there's this sort of romantic idea about art and creativity that, like, it just flows. And, like, you write and, like, the song comes out and you're like, boom, a record. But no, it's like you have to dedicate time to it.
Yep.
You have to, like, for a few months last year when I got the bulk of the work done, I was like, I'm getting up at 11. I'm going to draw for an hour. I'm going to feed my kid for mm-hmm. an hour, play with her, do some schoolwork with her.
Uh-huh.
Draw till 4, and then I can do this. Like, you just have to set a schedule for yourself.
Totally.
I was lucky enough that during that time I wasn't touring.
Right.
I was just, you know, I'd be doing, you know, 1 or 2 weeks of writing in LA and then, or New York or wherever we were going, and then come back when I was at home and work through the day. Like, it was a 9 to 5, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you just have to set aside time for it. And if you can put the work in, that's the difference between, like, just having a dream and, like, a dream becoming a reality. Like, a dream is just this non-tangible thing. It's the work that you put into it.
Amen.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about, like, more about the story and the themes that are in the album and in the comic? And this, like, awesome heroine that you created?
Yeah, she's a badass. Her name's Anne.
Uh-huh.
I think, so originally the basic idea of the story, this is the one that I took into all the songwriting sessions, and this is without giving too much away, the story of a young woman who is deeply in love, gets her heart broken, falls into this deep state of depression where she meets a dark friend who becomes almost her lover and convinces her to do all these things she shouldn't do, and then she ends up transitioning into this other world and then where she can't leave. And she has to turn within herself to overcome it. And this was a commentary on depression, something I've dealt with in the past, internal vices and, you know, addiction of whatever it might be, because everybody's dealing with different things.
Yeah.
And it's something that I think people need to talk about more. It's like, you should be able to be open with it, you know?
Totally.
So that's kind of where the idea of the story came from. It almost feels like a dark friend.
Okay.
And it's almost your lover, kind of.
Uh-huh.
So that was the basic metaphor for the story. And then, of course, the world built on top of that. And I remember during the process of working on this, I read a book called Writing for Comics by Alan Moore. And he basically said, like, before you flesh out your plot, create your world, create the government and the people that are there, and like your this and everything. And then when that's all finished and you have a good idea of what your world is, pick a wormhole in time through that world in which your story occurs, and then everything falls into place.
That's awesome.
So I created all these maps and created this whole world and then continued building the story from there. And that was when the sort of post-apocalyptic environment kicked in. And so as it turned out, I wanted this girl to live in a world where, like, that was devoid of hope. So I had to create a world that was devoid of hope. So it is the last city on Earth. It takes place in this place called Madison Oasis, which is like this sort of anomalous spring that kind of has continued though the rest of the world has died. So it's two classes of people that live divided by a wall, and the wealthy side is like basically a massive corporation that runs everything and continues to take and take and take. So there was a commentary in there on, like, corporate greed and the environment. And
it feels sadly so.
It feels sadly so.
And you wrote
true.
It before, but it was still
before, like, the election.
Before the election.
Yeah.
Pre and post.
U.S. election.
Right.
Yeah.
But somehow, like, that was in the air anyhow. And
literally before the wall even was being considered.
Right.
So
yeah.
It was, it's just like, and so there's definitely commentary in there on the environment. My dad is a green architect.
Oh, wow.
So we always end up getting into big conversations about what changes would need to happen in our infrastructure and our society in order to save the world, basically, because we're headed in a bad direction, right? But then there's a lot of people out there working on it.
Is your dad optimistic at all?
He is. I mean, especially being in Vancouver, like, we live in Vancouver area, and there's a lot of standards being put in place there. And you look at countries like Germany that are, like, basically take all their garbage and turn it into energy, and it's like, if you have the right minds and the right money put into it, like,
that's
the right government in place,
things
will get better,
right.
and so, but this book sort of takes place after that's too late,
right?
And they continue to take, and they continue to take. So she's on the poor side of the wall, which is the red sector, and and she it's a world where everyone just has nothing left, no hope left, and she is the one person who has this sort of, like, has always been raised to look for, like, a glimmer of hope in the rubble, and she's sort of on that journey looking for it. And she meets this guy, falls in love, he ends up giving her this tattoo. And I committed to the tattoo right here on her wrist.
Nice.
And this suddenly opens doors to a whole new path for her.
Cool.
In this world and potentially hope.
Yeah. No, I mean, I love that you are dealing with themes of darkness and vulnerability. But then, like, you look at your track listing and there are songs called Skydiving, Savage, New Fears, Fight Club. It's like, it's also super empowering,
yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
It's like, you can be vulnerable and really strong at the same time.
I love that you picked up on that because this is something I think about a lot. I grew up reading comics. And never identify with characters in comics more than I do now.
Yeah.
Because now it's not superhero comics anymore. Mm. Superheroes are only relatable to a certain degree because mm-hmm. we're not like that.
Mm-hmm.
People, they're perfect. They don't, like, they're impregnable.
Right.
We are, like, flawed human beings, and that doesn't mean we're shitty.
Right.
You know what I mean? I find myself identifying with characters that make bad choices and mm-hmm. have issues mm-hmm. and have moments of weakness where they have nothing left, but they find strength in that, you know? Doesn't mean you're a weak person or doesn't mean you're a bad character.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so this character, the more I wrote her, the more she became like me. And then she basically is me in, like, an apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
I always tell people they can get to know me a little bit through her dialogue because uh-huh. she responds to things the way I do because I'm obviously writing from my perspective. But, yeah, she's got lots of issues. And I think I relate to those kind of characters more. Like, take Wonder Woman, for example. I uh-huh. love Wonder Woman. I just like what she stands for. I like her strength and power, but I never connected with her more than I did when there's, like, the story arc where she goes blind for a year and has to go under to the underworld in her blind state and find Hades. And she's so vulnerable and still powers through it. And I'm like, wow, this is the first time I've seen her weak. And that's when I fell in love with her, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think... You know, and especially as more female creators come into the picture, I think we're getting a bit more of a realistic perspective.
Totally.
And more relatable perspective for other women.
Yeah.
And that's obviously changing the ratio with female and male viewers, readers and fans and creators.
I mean, are there even other women comic book creators that you can aspire to?
Oh, there's a lot now. I mean, a lot of what I read is, like, there's one book I read called Monstrous, and it's all female creators.
Okay.
There's one called Bitch Planet, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Highly recommend. Saga
so
is actually.
So you sought them out. You found them.
Oh yeah, and they're not. And they are. There's quite a. I think the ratio. I don't quote me on this, but I think the ratio is like 1-3.
Oh,
there's like.
That's a lot better than
improving.
Some other industries.
Especially in indie publishers with the big names like uh-huh. Marvel and DC, I think the ratio is a little bit lower,
unfortunately,
but that's going to change, I think.
Hell yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It's all changing.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Coming for you guys.
And it's like a self-perpetuating cycle. Like, I think the more female readers that become fans of comics, that's the thing with comics. Everyone that reads comics wants to be a creator. So they'll start creating content that they relate to and that they like, and then other women are going to see that, and it's a self-perpetuating positive cycle.
Right, and I wonder if similarly with music, the access to the software and the the ability to just mm-hmm. pick it up and learn it from YouTube and just do it, if more women will get into it also.
I hope so, and I think that's one place I've seen a huge void is music production. Mm. There's...
Yeah,
like purely female producers, or even like female front of house mixers, you know, like female masters.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't see them. I've only ever worked with a female producer once.
Yeah.
And
how did you get into it? Like doing 8-track and
I know
as a 14-year-old.
Yeah, I think the funny thing was is like I had my interest when I was a kid. I was always kind of doing my own thing, and so I didn't really gauge what the rest of the world was doing. I'm like, I'm interested in this. I'm going to spend my inheritance money, which I got when I was 13, on like this 8-track, which was $1,000.
Inheritance from who?
Yeah, my oma. And she didn't die. She just gave me money. She's still
That's
around.
Amazing. Great.
Shout out to my oma.
Don't you want to share it while you're still alive?
Right? Look at you fed into
joy.
This career. She really did.
Yeah.
I really don't know how that happened, though. But,
she saw you as a good investment.
Yeah.
Yeah, she knew you weren't going to blow it on some.
Right, there we go. So I think for me, it wasn't one of those things where I needed to see somebody doing it to be able to do it. But I think a lot of young women are that way,
mm-hmm.
where role models are important. And if you see it, you can be it. And if you just don't see it, there's no reason to want it.
You don't know it's possible.
You don't know it's possible. You don't care. You're just like, whatever. I don't care about that. I don't know about that career.
Yeah, yeah. But you can see pretty much anything now.
You can't. You can. If you look for it. But if it's not put in front of your face, you're not going to find it. And this is it's becoming a lot more prevalent in my scope of vision now that I have a 3-year-old.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask.
And seeing what's marketed to these young children. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty fucking shameless, man.
Yeah.
How people are marketing to little kids.
Yeah.
And how they're really trying to instill roles in kids at that age.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see right through it sometimes, you know, like, and it drives me crazy. Like, there's nothing, unless it's this cool, groundbreaking new company, it's like,
right,
young girls aren't marketed science-y stuff or techie stuff, or necessarily even music stuff. It's like, yeah, singing and being in a band is one thing. That's really cool. We're seeing a lot of women. And that's already been established as something that women do. So, like, it's being marketed to kids now. But not anything from the other side of it.
Production.
But, like, little boys are being marketed DJ sets and all this stuff, but not little girls.
Right.
So we need to, you know, if there's anybody listening right now that's like an app developer or a programmer or whatever, you know, spread the love. Like, let's build apps that are targeted at kids. Let's make TV shows that are targeted at kids, advertisements that are more balanced or maybe something specifically targeted at little girls that show them that there's other career lines out there, you know?
Yeah. I just saw this comedian, Rhea Butcher, do a set about how when little girls are born, no one cares what they're going to do. Like, they don't even pay attention to them. It's like, whatever. Then they turn to little boys and they go, don't like things that girls like.
Yeah.
Whatever you like, don't like the girl things. You have to like the boy things, you know? It's
just
like obsession about molding the boys a certain way. And like, girls, you know, maybe like be a teacher, like what, you know, mother, like whatever.
Yeah.
But like, not that much concern in general about what they're
going to grow up to be. Lot of the stuff I'm noticing is marketed at young women. And these are all great things, but it's a very limited scope is like fashion, friends, love, animals.
Right.
Art, like, and that's and that's really cool stuff. Yeah, dance, but like it's pretty much the scope of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we just need some things that are shamelessly marketed at little girls that are a broader perspective of things.
Or just like neutral.
That's the thing. But like, and the thing with marketing, for at least from what I've noticed, is like it's shameless color coding.
Right.
Like, and so if you market something as neutral, the little girls won't be drawn to it.
Mm.
So
right,
you work
with
that's a shift that needs to happen. It's like, well, if I'm gonna market something that's marketed outside of what they're normally targeted, like say I'm gonna make a tech app for young girls, I'm gonna shamelessly market at young girls because that's the only edge you have.
And that's,
do you know what I mean? Work within those shameless. If you're gonna be shameless about colors, then I'm gonna work within that and I'm gonna make them something interesting.
How do you?
Unless you change the color scope, but then you're dealing with like massive corporations and it's like one man against the world. You know what I mean?
Totally.
One woman against the world.
I mean, how young are we when we learn that pink is for girls?
Well, immediately.
I was looking online to buy twin babies of a friend of mine, like gifts. And I was looking at like, and it was all like tiaras and tutus and all that stuff. And I was like, 5 years ago, I would have bought that for my friends.
Yeah.
And I don't want to now.
Yeah.
But like, it's a tricky thing because it's not bad, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, a tiara is a little, I don't know. But but like pink stuff.
I think everything in balance, right? Like my daughter loves pink and I'm never going to be like, yo, you can't like that.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like I'm going to let her like whatever she wants, but she also likes Ninja Turtles and she likes trucks and stuff, and then people will be like, oh god, your daughter's a tomboy. I'm like, no, she just likes what she likes.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
I don't like that word tomboy because it's like, just because she likes things that typically boys like doesn't mean she's a boy.
Totally. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Man, it's tricky.
Yeah. But it's really exciting. Like I'm excited because I understand it now, and I think that it's in our hands to change. And I think it has to start with individual creators, and then eventually I think it'll change on a bigger scale.
Yeah. No, I'm just thinking about how I feel like every day now I'm fighting for myself in those ways, you know, and I'm in my 30s.
Yeah.
And then to have a child who you're also doing that for, it's like, it's like you're trying to like protect two people in battle. Yeah. You're trying to like save two humans in this world that's like really trying to push a lot of shit on you.
I know. It is getting better though. Like there's a lot of cool programming. Like there's a whole there's apps and games and toys called Goldie Blocks, and it's all engineering.
Oh, cool.
A whole engineering line just for girls.
Yeah.
And that's really awesome. Cool. And it's really fun. They're building and they learn how to make zip lines and all this cool stuff. So I get that stuff all the time. And it's like, that's not neutral marketing that's like for girls. And I think that's really cool. And girls deserve to have that edge, I think, you know, and more stuff like that I think needs to happen.
Yeah. Has your daughter seen your comics?
Yeah, she does. She thinks like that's what I do for a living, I think. She's like, I'm going to be a drawer like you.
That's cool.
But yeah, and she, yeah, she's... She loves art. She's loving it. Yeah.
Okay,
I'm glad she can't read because the comics are rated mature. I'll just warn everybody
dark,
right now.
Yeah.
But she looks at it and she's like, "What are you doing in this picture?" And it'd be like blood and like this. I'm like, it's not me.
In like another couple years, you're gonna be locking those away.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they gonna be in print form?
They are printed.
Okay,
yeah.
They are.
And you can get them both forms as well, but you can get them digitally, but they're in comic shops. You bring them in, you can order them online.
That must be cool.
It's amazing.
It's like there aren't record shops anymore, but you can go into a comic shop.
It's
and buy
the
it.
Best.
That's great.
Yeah, comic shops are one of the coolest environments you'll ever go in. Going to cons is like, ever want
to
go to an inclusive environment?
Did you go to Comic-Con this year?
Yeah, and I was actually on a panel. I was already as a guest this year. It was pretty crazy, yeah. But it's literally like everyone from all walks of life are welcome at cons, and it's the most welcoming place you could ever be.
That's true.
You know, like, and not feel like you stand out.
Yeah, it's a great community.
It's an awesome community, And it's expanding so rapidly. I remember, like, there's one in Toronto called Fan Expo, and I was there this year as well.
Uh-huh.
I've been going to Fan Expo for 10 years. God, I remember when I went 10 years ago,
wow.
And it was, like, in one room. It was small and it was cool and like it was kind of niche.
Uh-huh.
But now, 10 years later, it's like the entire convention center and hundreds of thousands of people passing through every day. And it's just amazing to see the growth. And I think a lot of people are discovering their home in this world, you know.
That's really nice.
Do you have many comrades in the comic world in your music life? Like, are your fellow musicians, are they into comics at all? Or are you kind of like
I mean, a few of them. I wish there were more. But when you do meet somebody, like a good friend of mine, DCF, he likes comics, so we always end up talking about that when we're together.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's a few people that have read, you know, a couple Iron Man issues and, like, are like, yeah, I love comics, and that's cool, too. But, like, you know, I want to talk about the ones I'm reading right now.
Yeah.
And some people are just into manga or something. People, like, that's the thing. It's such a vast world that like you don't have to read everything,
right?
There's something for everybody.
Yeah,
if you just like manga, or if you just like indie comics, or if you just like
old
romance comics like I used to, you know.
Uh-huh,
what I mean.
Uh-huh. So the next album that you do, presuming you'll do another album one of these days,
someday.
Will it also be accompanied by comics?
I don't know. I mean, I don't think I can ever go back to making just a record, do you know what I mean? Like, I think there's something so fulfilling about the multifaceted aspect, because there's so much more I've discovered this making this record and this project, that like there is so much more than just audio.
Yeah.
All
although
this
you do also
palettes.
Make amazing music videos.
Well, and that's another aspect of it too. And that was even, I've never had such a clear vision for my videos that I have, I don't know how I'm phrasing this, but the most clear vision that I've ever had for videos has been this project, because I know exactly what they're supposed to be about and what they're supposed to show in the color palette. Thank
you. The videos are amazing.
Thank you. And it's all been the same director, Jeremy Schallenroo, who's kicking ass.
Yeah.
And we're going to be doing a video for every issue. And there's four out already.
So cool.
Yeah.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Shit, I just lost what I was going to say.
Was it about the video?
No.
But yeah, like, I don't know if I could. I just love the idea of these giving fans more.
Yeah.
And especially in this day and age when there's so much music out there, what, you know, reward people for wanting to hear a whole record.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, if a fan only wants to listen to singles, that's cool. But if there's a fan who cares about the entire record, let's give you a visual accompaniment for everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a reason to dive into all those lyrics, and there's a reason to listen to an album from front to back.
Uh-huh.
There's a reason to try to understand everything or pick up on the Easter eggs in the comic.
Yeah.
Instead of just saying, oh, here's one song and this represents my body of work.
Yeah.
Easter eggs and work like that is so fun.
No, it's cool. It's almost like a kind of retro way of looking at music, which I miss, like an early rock kind of concept of like what an album is.
Yeah. Enjoying that from front to back. Like, at the end of the day when all these issues are out, and maybe we'll bundle it all into like a graphic novel.
Yeah.
And then you sit down and you follow along and you listen to the record. It's going to be a really cool experience.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then it's like optioned into a TV show. And
download that onto me right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I read that this also allowed you to open up to new themes in your music.
Yeah.
Like new ideas that you were, I guess, a little bit timid to explore before.
Yeah.
Like what?
It's funny. It took like this fictional character as a conduit for me to unlock the side of myself that I didn't feel like I could write about. Because I think in the past, I've felt, and I think there's a degree of truth to it, that if you write about something, the people listening to it are just going to assume that's what's happening in your life at that time. So if I were to write Savage, which is about your heart being smashed and hating, like just being so angry at somebody. Yeah. If I were to write that without the context of the comic necessarily, people would be like, yo, her marriage is like, all right. But that's the bystander voice. Yo.
Is that what your fans look
like? Yeah. Right? Yo, man. Like, check it out. But that's not to say I've never been angry. I get angry all the time.
Yeah, right.
It's such an important emotion.
Yeah.
And my heart's been broken, and I've been in this place before.
Yeah.
I've just never written about it because I never felt like I could.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't want people to like, or even the people around me to think that it was about them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like there's this sort of degree of insecurity when you write something that people are like listening back that you know and like, whoa, are you okay? Or even my husband listened to it like, yo, you hate me?
It's funny that we don't hear that more. I feel like we talk a lot about how much a listener should or, you know, might want to listen as if it's real and truth.
Yeah.
And different artists feel very differently about that. I mean, I think it's I understand that so completely that you would want to protect the people around you from like, yeah, that's not about you or, you know.
Yeah. Really, well, because I mean, I write from an authentic place, that I don't just write something for the sake of writing it.
Mm-hmm.
And even the songs, even though these songs are written about parts of the story that are important, they're all things that I've dealt with.
Yeah.
And it's not to say they're happening right now.
Right.
Like the theme of sex, say you're going to write a song that's based on sex.
Uh-huh.
And then your parents hear it and they're like, okay, so this is about the other night. You know, it's so like, you're just like,
you can't
I'd rather
think about
just
your parents
like,
when you're songwriting.
No, I know.
Like
you just like, you know, that's all in there in your head when you're writing. So, with this comic, it was like, it allowed me to, well, this is the part
I'm
where
character.
They bang. So I'm going to write a song about sex, which is skydiving. And like, this is a great thing. Sex is awesome. And it's something we've done. And it's like, it's not like I've never experienced it.
Right.
So it's just an awesome way for me to suddenly talk about these things I never let myself before.
Yeah.
It took this fictional character for me to be authentic, I guess.
That's cool. And I do have one question about a specific detail about her that I want to know if it's true or not. Is she Jewish? Because there's a detail about her like looking for a good borscht.
Is that a Jew? I thought it was Russian.
Well, I guess, it's Russian Russian Jew. And, like, my Jewish grandfather was obsessed with borscht.
That's
so, I was
so
like, is this
funny.
A Jewish, like, comic book hero? Because that'd be fucking
awesome. That would be awesome.
Is she just Russian?
Well, we don't, the thing is, I haven't explored her, I guess, ancestral lines yet in the story. But
see, I'm looking to see myself in the comics that you're writing.
But she might be.
Yeah, okay.
The thing is this world, and this leads to a couple things, actually. The world that is in this comic is like the last city on Earth, right? So it's very multicultural. It's like basically this melting pot of like every culture and language. So there's lots of different languages in the background, on the storefronts.
Yeah.
There's lots of mixed people like all throughout the comics. So the whole point is like that it is a merging of different cultures. And to reflect that, I've actually, this is an aside, but I've recorded the single in 4 different languages. That's going to be coming out. Yeah, it's an awesome experience.
Which languages?
Oh, we'll see. We'll see.
Does that come from you like living around the world?
Well, part of it.
Kid?
Yeah, like I grew up in the Philippines. So, you know, there's a lot of, I can do some accents. Some accents pretty good. So that helped. But so that and with Borscht, I knew I wanted her to have this food she loved, because I have these like things that I just have to have. Uh-huh. She loves wine, which I love. And then
do you love Borscht?
Well, and this is the thing. So I wanted to find a fast
food.
I've
never met anyone besides my grandfather who loves wine.
Exactly. Well, and I've literally never tried it because it sounds disgusting.
Right.
Yes.
Just the word.
And it's,
yes.
It's like fermented vinegar cabbage beets. Yeah. And for me, I was like, what is like a food that would never be fast food? Borscht. And I was like, what is a food that looks weird in a fast food box? Borscht, like this purple drippy stuff.
Yeah. It seems sad.
It's kind of just like, it's kind of like the Great Depression food or something.
Totally.
Yeah. And that was how I landed on Borscht as like the fast food place, because it's just so ironic and weird and wouldn't be a thing.
That's amazing.
And it was like either that or dim sum. I'm like, dim sum is too obvious. It's so good.
Yeah.
Borscht, on the other hand. So she's like obsessed with Borscht and still have yet to try it. Yeah.
Well, my grandfather would appreciate it. So
cheers, Grandpa.
Cheers, Grandpa.
All right, we're going to let you go. You're going to talk with our colleague, Chris Payne.
Yeah.
From this Alternative Facts podcast.
Yeah.
We're all passing you around to the billboard while we have
you. I've been here a lot this year. You guys can't get rid of me.
It's true. It's don't stop coming back.
I'll be back.
Yeah. And in the meantime, you'll be on tour.
Yes.
And everyone can go check you out.
And lots more touring to come in the next year. So
amazing.
More comics.
Yeah, more comics. Got to get to the finishing last
year. Yeah, good luck with that, girl.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Liz.
Thank you. These new fears carry with me, so you can feel stronger, and you can know peace. So just hold on tight, I'll be coming, I'm coming for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.